In the sun-drenched peach orchards of 1948 Colorado, 17-year-old Victoria Nash's world revolves around tending her family's renowned fruit trees and caring for her father, volatile brother Seth, and disabled Uncle Og. Since her mother's death 5 years earlier, Victoria has shouldered all domestic responsibilities while watching their once thriving farm fall into disrepair. Her days follow predictable rhythms until a chance encounter with Wilson Moon, a young man who's hopped a train to escape the coal mines, changes everything. Their connection is immediate and profound, defying the town's rigid racial boundaries and awakening Victoria to possibilities beyond her prescribed existence. In Wilson's gentle presence, Victoria discovers parts of herself previously dormant, curiosity, desire, and a yearning for freedom. Their relationship unfolds in secret meetings by Willow Creek, sheltered by the kindness of Ruby Alice Akers, a local outcast who becomes their unexpected ally. For the first time, Victoria experiences what it means to be truly seen and valued for herself, rather than for what she can provide to others. Their happiness proves brief. When Wilson fails to appear for their rendezvous, Victoria's search reveals a horrifying truth. Her brother Seth, motivated by racism and reward money, was involved in Wilson's disappearance. Seth's drunken boast that he got better than that reward confirms her fears. Pregnant with Wilson's child and devastated, Victoria flees into the wilderness of Big Blue, rejecting the community that destroyed her happiness. In the mountains, she builds a rudimentary shelter and attempts to create a life for herself and her unborn child. The wilderness survival is both harrowing and transformative. The narrative unflinchingly depicts Victoria's physical hardships, hunger, isolation, and the terror of giving birth alone. Yet within this struggle, she discovers unexpected strength. "I have never been less afraid in my life," she realizes, finding paradoxical freedom in her isolation from the societal constraints that once defined her. As Victoria's milk supply dwindles and her garden is destroyed by snowfall, she faces her most wrenching decision. Weakened by starvation, she encounters a well-to-do couple picnicking with their infant. The contrast between their abundance and her destitution is stark. Her own baby, wrapped in threadbare blankets, makes barely a sound, a silence more terrifying than crying. Recognizing her son faces death if she keeps him, Victoria makes an excruciating choice. While the couple is distracted, she places her baby in their car with a hastily scrawled note. This sacrifice epitomizes the novel's exploration of maternal love, the willingness to endure unbearable pain to give one's child a chance at life. The aftermath leaves deep emotional wounds. Victoria wanders for days in a fever-induced haze before returning to Iola, where Ruby Alice takes her in without question. During recovery, she battles physical weakness alongside overwhelming grief and guilt, spending nights pacing Ruby Alice's spare room. After her father's death from tuberculosis, Victoria endures a series of losses, her draft horse to colic, her cattle to a harsh winter. The final blow comes when the government announces plans for a dam that will submerge Iola underwater. While neighbors resist fiercely, Victoria becomes the first to sell, secretly relieved at the prospect of seeing her painful memories drowned. Yet she cannot abandon everything. Working with botanist Seymour Greeny Greeley, she saves her family's unique peach varietals, transplanting them to new ground in Paonia, where they might flourish again. Throughout these years, Victoria maintains one ritual connecting her to her lost child. Each summer, she returns to the clearing where she abandoned her baby, placing a stone in a circle to mark another year of his absence, her only way of mothering from afar, a physical manifestation of her enduring love. The novel's central metaphor emerges from Wilson's grandfather's advice for handling difficult situations: "I'll go as a river." This philosophy, finding the path of least resistance while maintaining one's essential nature, becomes Victoria's guiding principle. like water, conforming to any vessel while retaining its fundamental properties, she learns to adapt without losing herself. This wisdom extends beyond mere survival to encompass a deeper truth about identity and transformation. Just as a river remains itself despite changing course, whether rushing through narrow canyons or spreading peacefully across valleys, Victoria maintains her essential self through devastating losses and new beginnings. The water imagery gains additional layers throughout the narrative. Like the seasonal changes of a river, from spring floods to winter ice, Victoria's journey encompasses both moments of overwhelming emotion and periods of apparent stillness. The river's patience in carving through rock mirrors her own steady persistence in searching for truth, while its ability to nurture life despite harsh conditions reflects her capacity for love and growth in the face of loss. 20 years after abandoning her baby, Victoria discovers diary pages left at the Stone Circle by Inga Tate, who found and raised him. Through these entries, Victoria learns her son's name, Lucas, and his complex upbringing alongside Inga's biological son, Maxwell. The pages reveal how Lucas grew into a thoughtful young man who always sensed his difference, particularly from his volatile twin brother and dismissive adoptive father. This revelation illuminates the ripple effects of Victoria's desperate choice. Her son lived a life both blessed and troubled, saved from starvation but subjected to prejudice, loved by his adoptive mother but never fully belonging. Upon discovering his true origins before the Vietnam draft, Lucas enlists immediately, severing ties with his adoptive family. The novel culminates with Victoria, Inga, and eventually Lucas reuniting at Blue Mesa Reservoir, the man-made lake now covering Victoria's childhood home. This setting embodies the novel's central metaphor. What lies beneath the surface of landscapes, lives, and memories continues to shape what remains visible above. Go as a River fundamentally celebrates human resilience against overwhelming loss. Victoria endures devastating blows, her mother's early death, Wilson's brutal murder, the sacrifice of giving up her child, her father's slow decline, and her hometown's literal drowning beneath reservoir waters. Yet through each tragedy, she persists, planting trees in harsh Colorado soil and creating beauty in a world that showed her its darkest corners. Victoria's strength never feels superhuman, but emerges from necessity and develops through daily practice. In the methodical work of tending orchards, in quiet moments of grief, in small acts of moving forward when standing still would be easier. I realize that strength comes from both resilience and vulnerability, she reflects, from small triumphs and countless failures. The novel's exploration extends beyond mere survival to transformation. Victoria learns to swim in grief without drowning, to hold both love and loss in the same heart, to find purpose in tending what remains while honoring what's lost. Her relationship with the land becomes a source of strength, teaching her that even harsh winters give way to spring. We learn that resilience isn't becoming impervious to pain, but remaining open to both suffering and joy, allowing life to flow through us like water through a canyon, shaping us but never breaking us completely.